on to Sylvia. So Sylvia, I got some stuff off the website. She's the unpredictable producer and engineer known for her work with Tool, Johnny Cash, Prince, Tom Petty, and the Red Hot Chili Peppers. But there's a whole lot more to Sylvia than music. She unexpectedly appears in the most unusual places, from caves to castles to icebergs to submarines, doing the most unconventional recordings. Does that describe it?
Yeah.
I could go on and read about Sylvia Massey, but we were talking at dinner, and anybody that's into audio needs to know how to do audio. But then they need to take it to the next level and get creative. And that's what Sylvia is. She's like the creativity queen of the audio world. And, you know, if you're in the game world, you have to be creative about creating these sounds that you're trying to make come to life with a monster. You could do that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So anyway, I won't go on and on, but I think Sylvia Massey is a gift to us all. And so, everybody, yay. Sylvia Massey.
Hello, I have a lavalier mic here. Check, check, check. Thank you for coming. My name is Sylvia, and when someone says, you can't do that, I say, oh, yes, I can. And whether or not it actually works, at least I'm going to try. So I prepared a little PowerPoint presentation for our discussion tonight. And then after the PowerPoint, we'll do some of the giveaway, and then we'll take a short break, and then we'll come back for a Q&A if you'd like to start a discussion about audio or anything you'd like to talk about. I'm game for that. And then at the very end of our talk, then we'll do the other part of the giveaway, which will be, I think, the Recording Unhinged book, and then I've got some posters I'd be glad to give you, some custom posters, and I'll sign them and everything. So stick around as long as you can. So anyway, let's start with our presentation here. And it's you can see up here, here's the, that's a Shure 55, isn't it? I've been doing a lot of research on microphones because currently I'm writing a microphone book. So I happen to really be into microphones. And let's talk about microphones. First of all, is bigger better? Well, a lot of people might say yes, bigger isn't better, but it's really not the size, but how you use it, right? So, for instance, if you're going to mic a double bass, you might think twice about doing it this way, because you're going to have some phase cancellation problems with all these mics. Pick a good mic, pick a few mics, you know, and choose your sounds, and then you're going to get a much better result. And the way that I have learned about using microphones has really been by trial, and by also kind of shedding that idea of it has to be done a certain way. Like, I used to believe that if you're going to record vocals properly, that you had to have a stand and a mic suspended on that stand with a shock mount, with a pop filter, and have your singer stand still and project into this microphone, not too close. All right, well, for this particular musical artist, when I started watching this band in clubs, this is Tool, around 1991, in a club in Los Angeles called Raji's. And there's me in the back of the room behind Tom Morello, and we would support our friends in with their young bands, and the singer Maynard would step on stage and he would grab the microphone and he would sing like this, raw, just singing into the floor. You know, totally like, you know, not proper at all. Proper, what is proper? But that was his style. So when it came to the opportunity for me to record him in the studio. First, I did. I tried this thing where you have a stand, and we had a beautiful U67 Neumann, and we set it on the stand. Yeah. And, well, I didn't want him to get too close to it because I knew something was going to happen to it. But there was a pop filter, and he stood and, you know, sang. And it was nothing like how he performed live. I wanted to capture that live kind of energy. So we wound up using a handheld mic. And it wasn't necessarily a mic that would be used for vocals typically. It was a C1000 AKG. And we wrapped it in foam so that we wouldn't hear all this, the hand noises. And he sang in the studio like this. And apparently, this the stomach muscles, when he leans into it, compress and give him much more power. And that was a part of the secret to his performances. And what I began to realize is that, well, there has been a kind of a de-evolution of vocals over time, where you could see Tony Bennett, you know, had the upright thing, and then we had Robert Plant, and he started swinging it around, and then Axl Rose, and he was doing this thing on stage, and then Jonathan Davis from Korn would be leaning over, and then finally Henry Rollins was all the way down, and that's the style that Maynard would use. So, in fact, now when I go into the studio, one of the most important mics in my arsenal is this simple mic right here. It's a Shure SM58, and the reason it's a $100 mic. There's nothing particularly special about this mic except that it has a fairly tight pattern. It's a cardioid, but it has a fairly tight pattern because of the what is housed, how the capsule's housed. If you take it off, it becomes basically a SM57. Look at me. I'm just grabbing things, taking it apart. Right? This usually can get me in trouble. But yeah, this mic is my most valuable studio tool. Now, when I worked with Smashing Pumpkins, with Rick Rubin producing, I was engineering, and we went to we were working at Ocean Way, and I set up 10 different microphones. We wanted to listen to all the microphones to see which one was the best for Billy Corgan's vocal. And we set them all along in a row. There was a Telefunken Elam 251, which is worth about, you know, $15,000 to $20,000 today, crazily enough. M49 Neumann, Neumann U47, a Neumann U46, I'm sorry, a U67, a U87, an AKG C12 mic, a C12A, an AKG 414, Sennheiser 421, and then an SM57 and an SM58. And we had him sing the same verse on a different track for each mic. And then at the end of that, we listened back to each track not knowing what mic it was that we were listening to. And everyone in the room, Rick Rubin and the band members and me, we all made notes on which mic we liked the best. And surprisingly, out of all those, you know, $30,000 worth of microphones, the SM58 won. It was tied, basically, with the Elam 251. But because he could grab this thing and knock it around and be more comfortable, we were going to get a better performance with it. So, and that's why I love this microphone. So never be shy about having an inexpensive microphone. It's like, you can't do that. Oh, yes, I can. You know, you can also use, you can get different effects. Big mic, little amp. This seriously was the guitar recording setup for an entire album. The Spiderbait was an Australian group called Spiderbait, and the album was Tonight All Right. And this was the only thing we used for guitar recording. And that was a huge record for Australia. It was like a number one record for a while. It had a song on it called Black Betty, which appeared in many films. Not so big in the States, but huge in Australia. Another thing about mics, which is just a simple guide that I'd like to describe to you, and you can take it as you'd like, but in regards to phase alignment with drums and the miking of drums, I do a very, very simple thing. All I do is I just point all the mics in one direction. When I'm miking different drums in a drum kit, typically you might have this mic come in on this side, this mic come on this side. Well, if you look, you're pointing mics at each other and you're going to have phase problems. If all you do is, and I'm pretending I'm sitting in the drummer position, if you have all those mics pointing in one direction, even if you have to kind of futz the stands around to get it that way, you'll eliminate most of the phase problems right off. And this is something that I do. I set all the mics up simply this way, and then I do a quick listen, comparing the overheads with each individual mic on the drums, and I check for phase. Any mics on the bottom of drums, I flip out a phase usually, and I can get a drum sound really fast just by using this one rule. There may be some changes that need to be done once I start listening carefully to the phase relationships between those mics, but for the most part, that is a shortcut to get you where you need to go. So that's one of my tricks. I have many tricks. I have, I'm an expert at miking a chicken. I know how to mic a chicken, and you think, yeah, right, Celia, all right. But in fact, I have miked several chickens, and I'm an expert at Ed's chicken solos. Now, no chickens were hurt in the making of this recording, but you just, all you have to do is when you're miking a chicken, you mic it from the front, usually. And then you are wearing your headphones and you gently squeeze the chicken when it's time for the chicken solo. Ba-cock! All right. Nah. You know, anything goes, right? You can use anything as an instrument. And anything as a microphone, basically. There's all kinds of things you can do with mics. This is something probably most of you know about, because we are oftentimes looking for a really simple way to capture low frequencies, sub frequencies on a kick drum just by reversing a speaker. This is an NS10 speaker, and reverse wiring it to act as a microphone, you'll get wonderful sub, and I do it on every single drum recording. It's a simple, easy thing that can be built. I also learned how to make simple microphones from telephones. And this is the most fun because when I go on trips and I travel quite a bit, I go to different countries and I go straight to the flea market or the thrift store and I look for an old telephone that I can modify. And I take the handset and unscrew the mouthpiece, and inside the, you can't see it in this photograph, but inside the mouthpiece is a small carbon button in a tray. And you just rewire the tray so that you connect an XLR cable to it. And then on one of the sides of the cable, you insert a 1.5 volt battery. And I just solder it right in there. And you can see I've hidden the battery in the ear compartment of this particular phone handset. And then you have a line level mic. Sounds like a telephone. They're very useful and fun, and pretty much I wind up using something like that on almost every record. All right, so we've finished talking about mics. Mics are very interesting, and you don't necessarily have to have expensive mics to do good recordings, but I have to say, if we're talking about what happens next, which is where the mic goes into a mic preamplifier, it makes a huge difference. I think that if you're going to spend any money on anything, get it in the mic preamp. I'm spoiled. I have this. This is my console at home. It's a Neve, custom Neve with 1073 EQs, and the Mike Pres are the best. I think that they do add color, but wow, these are really great Mike Pres. And pretty much anything I record sounds good through this, and it makes my job a lot easier. You can get similar results by using these digital modelers, which is this is a 1073 modeling plugin by Waves and Andrew Sheps, and I've put them side by side. UA makes one too. If you just record the microphone signal and then process it with this plugin, you'll get similar results. The thing that is a little scary about using plugins versus using hardware for me is with a plugin you're not committing. And that's always a scary thing because you never know who's going to get the files after you and if they're going to have the right software and if they're going to have a completely bad idea on if they're going to screw up your recording, basically. So I love the idea of committing with analog recording and processing. Another thing that I think is really important in recording is the space that you record in. And I'm in this room right now, and every time I walk into a room, I'm like, oh, yeah, we could do something in here. There's fairly low ceiling, okay, but this is a long shot. So I pay attention to different spaces because the space that you record in is as important as the equipment that you're recording with, I think. It becomes part of the instrument. It becomes an instrument. This is a theater that I bought in Northern California, and I put a studio in here for 18 years called Radio Star, and it was a big, big open room. We didn't remove the seats out of the theater. It remained just a big open space. I didn't put a wall of glass between the control room and the space we were recording in. It was complete open room recording. The bands would set up on stage. I had cables running under the floor to the back of the room where the recording equipment was. And communication was instant. I would record the initial tracks using headphones. But because I was using a Neve, I really didn't have to worry about things not sounding so good. It was like it was a winning combination every time. The one thing is when you're in the same room as the musicians, you can't talk shit about the musicians because they hear you. And you know that, you know, when you're behind the glass, you know, you can tell. Yeah, but what we would do is me and my engineer would write little notes to each other and hand them to each other and then crinkle them up and throw them in the trash and hope nobody dug through the trash to read the comments. We, like, God, that bass player sucks. You know? It doesn't always have to be big rooms. You can record anywhere. This was on a submarine, and we did actually record bass in a torpedo tube. And, you know, sometimes it's not even about the quality of the recording that you're going to get from going into some of these spaces, but it's more about the adventure, the experience of doing this. And somehow that feeling is imprinted into the recording. Whether or not you can really sense it later, I think that it does affect the way that things are played and what the listener perceives. So I look for places, unusual places, to do recordings whenever I can. And I've found myself in some very unusual places. This is on a cliff overlooking a fjord in Norway. This is a cave in Northern California. We did vocals in there and had the most wonderful natural reverb. This is just a couple weeks ago, was in just north of Rome in a place, and it's like the city of the dead. It was a tomb, an Etruscan tomb, 3,000 years old, and we actually found one of these tombs that we went inside, got rid of the bats, and did a recording in there, and it was amazing. And it was so creepy. And the way that things were sung were done with this tension, it was like nothing else you've ever heard. It's brilliant. So that works out. So I suggest, you know, try different spaces. And what I do is I have this little thing, and I brought it with me. And Rick over here has one of them sitting over there. It's the sound devices. This is a Mix Pre-10. This little sound devices thing has batteries on it, and I have a little strap that I just carry it underneath my coat, and I can sneak into places with my microphones. 8 mic pre's. Multi-track recorder, standalone multi-track recorder that also acts as an interface for your Pro Tools for your laptop. But on its own, you can record 8 mics at the same time. It is such a fantastic tool. So you'll find me in all kinds of places in the world with this thing, recording stuff. And there's many, you know, it's just unlimited where you can go with these things. Ah, all right, so. As far as the approach goes to recording, I've developed a few techniques that work for me. And especially with recording rock music, this is how I recorded the guitars when I was working with a band called System of a Down. And you can see the guitar was sent into a splitter box. And the splitter box went into 2 amps and then into 2 separate cabinets. Each speaker cabinet had 2 mics on it, and then it went into the console, which was an 8068 console, and then out of that into an old compressor. Now I summed all 4 mics into 1 track, into one signal, and then put it through the compressor on the way to the tape machine. This was in the 90s, so we were still using 2-inch tape, but the sound is great. And I have to say that part of it was due to this crappy old thing that I found in a garage in Burbank. Some old radio guy had it in his garage, and I bought it and took it home and plugged it in, and it sounded like crap, but it was awesome. So I never got it fixed. I have no idea what's wrong with it, but I don't want anyone to touch it. So I just run stuff through, drums, vocals, whatever, and it just gives it a big, furry, kind of grainy sound. And the Army, it's nicknamed the Army Man because of this little Army Man that Serge, the singer from System of a Down, stuck in there while we were recording. Broken instruments, broken gear, not a problem. You can do a lot with anything. The uglier, the better, I'd say. You can tell this guitar was well-loved. This was the main guitar on that Spiderbait record, the one with the teeny weeny little amp. But sometimes I'll also just on purpose break guitars for fun. This was a Sacrificial guitar, and I was in a thrift store today, and in fact there was the ideal Sacrificial guitar there. It was a no-name, you know, Strat copy for $35. And what you could do is bring this into a session. You've got a month-long session, and you say, okay, at the end of our session, we will sacrifice this guitar. And then everyone is so excited about that last part of the session and sacrificing the guitar that everyone gets all the parts done quick. You know, the guitar player doesn't fuss with it, you know, oh, let's try this and this and this. No, 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 everyone wants to go destroy a guitar at the end of the session. So, and in this case, the project was Machines of Love and Grace, and everyone added their little artwork and carved their name in it, and then we did. We dragged it up to the top of a cliff overlooking the ocean in Malibu at Indigo Ranch and got a screaming feedback before we threw it over the cliff and recorded it bouncing down the side. Drag it back up, and that's what happened to it. The dramatic recording turned out to not really have a place on the record, so ultimately we never even used the recording of it. But that's not the point. It's not the point. It's the experience of actually having done that and how it put more excitement into the recording of the entire project. So I would hope that everyone in your daily recording makes it an adventure and tries something weird. There's so many wonderful things out there to do. There's so many instruments that are so unusual. Now, this is a real drum kit from the 50s. It's a Trixon. It was made in Germany, and this was the predecessor to sonar drums. And in fact, you can see there was a partition in that kick drum. It wasn't melted or broken. That kick drum was built that way because there's a partition and two chambers with different tones, and it was played with a double kick. So it was a very early double kick drum. It's very hard to find heads for these things, but you can get heads, and they're calfskin heads. And the fun part about it is because they're all calfskin, the thing sounds like a big bunch of bongos. So it's a very unique sound. And if you're going to try, you know, why try a traditional kit? Why don't you try something different? You can also modify the instruments that you have just by adding a few things. Some rattly bits in the snare is always fun. And in every neighborhood, you will be surprised to find some amazing instruments you wouldn't even think were there. And here in many of the larger, older churches, you'll find these fabulous pipe organs. The fun thing about them is that if you have a way to record, you can have like my sound devices thing, or just a pair of iPhones, it will work. Get the choir director, the organist from the church to get involved in your project. They usually love to be able to do recordings. And so I've recorded three or four of these grand, the largest instruments that are just available. They are available. Not all are in tune, but sometimes it just doesn't matter. It's a dramatic thing to stand in front of a pipe organ and feel the entire room vibrate. They're huge and wonderful instruments. You can also be very inventive with what you use for percussion. This is some frozen trout. They make great claves, at least for the... You gotta work fast, though. I've also, on occasion, used a motorcycle as a solo instrument in the studio. Yeah, there's my console in the background that I couldn't do much recording for very long before we all kind of got gassed out. Luckily, the theater was a big theater. It was big enough that we could actually drive the motorcycle around inside the theater. So that was a fun day. Motorcycle solos. So think outside the box. There's a few techniques here on how you can make your recordings better. Just start trying things. I know sometimes it's just wasting time, but oftentimes you will get a very good result. Bass players, oftentimes they're rattling the strings. The strings are rattling, and they just need to calm their hands down, put a glove on it, and that completely changes the sound of the. You will be very surprised at how that will fix things. Another thing I like to do is when a guitar player wants to get feedback in their guitar, typically they'll insist on standing in front of a stack of speakers and their amplifier so that they can get this big squealing sound, and then their headphones are wrong, and then usually is a big problem. So this simple solution is to just split the signal, have the guitar player in the control room, split the signal. One signal goes out to the big stack that you have mic'd up, and the other, just have a little combo right there on the console. And then the guitar player can step in and get the feedback. And then it's just a simple little thing that will drive the feedback in the large stack, but it's not a big deal to get it. Also, I love these things. They're surface transducers. This is basically the coil of a speaker without the cone. It's what drives the speaker without the cone. And so you can mount a surface transducer on a wall and make the whole wall a speaker. And it's fun to use. You can get them online pretty easily. I think people use them when they're putting together their audio systems in their cars because they want to vibrate the trunk and all that with the boom boom. Well, I use it by mounting it actually on a guitar, if the guitarist will let me. And then if I send the signal from the guitar to an amplifier and then back to the surface transducer, causes a big loop with this sweet sustain that is like no other sustain. And I've drawn a diagram like this to demonstrate how that works. It's a very simple thing that just adds this wonderful sweet sustain. I just think that, you know, maybe this is the long way around, you know. You could do this with an e-bow or probably some kind of guitar pedal, but, you know, there's something to actually spending more time to get a sound and actually going through the steps to make something new that just, there's such value in that, in the recording studio to get better performances. I'm oftentimes sitting around and thinking of new and wonderful wacky ideas to waste time in the studio. So this one was one. And okay, so you have an amplifier and we're sitting around, we're thinking about, well, how come potatoes, when you suspend them in water, you can get an electrical charge from that potato. You can make a potato clock, right? Same with a lemon. You can get an electrical charge from a lemon. Well, what does that mean? Is there's some conductivity in that potato or lemon? So we decided we would do an experiment and take the output of an amplifier and put it through potatoes on the way to the speaker. And I made a special cable. And let's see, I'll open up my box here. And I think I've got the cables. This is generally the way I do it. And I it seems like crazy, right? But we did do it. And there's a positive potato and a negative potato. With very simple, you just cut your speaker cable in half and then insert potatoes. And okay, so it didn't sound that great. All right. Okay. Didn't sound that great. In fact, there was a lot of attenuation, but there was a nice high shelf. But as soon as I tried hot dogs, it was like, well, actually, hot dogs are pretty flat. But it was cheese sausage that all of a sudden something was going on. I was like, well, what's the difference between a hot dog and a cheese dog? Well, it's the cheese. So I went for the cheese. I went for straight cheese, and I did a cheese filter just using this simple, it's a speaker cable that's been cut in half, and then on one side, I don't do the two sides now. There's not a positive cheese and a negative cheese. It's just one cheese. And in fact, you get a great blues tone. I usually use Gouda. And you think this is crazy, right? But honest to God, if you think about it, it's probably has something to do with the sodium chloride content in these things. The potatoes, not a lot of sodium chloride. But you get into the meats and then cheeses, and you got a lot more salt content. So I'm not exactly sure why it works, except I have a sneaking suspicion it has to do with sodium chloride content. I've done this experiment with pickles, and in fact, I was here doing a workshop and did the pickle experiment where if you use this same kind of circuitry and go from the speaker out of a solid state amplifier into this special cable where you can insert a filter on the way to the speaker, and if you take that and insert pickle, let's say a dill pickle, that pickle will light up like a light bulb. In fact, I do light up light bulbs with this other rig here. I've got the light bulb here. But I take a a similar speaker cable and cut it in half and then divert. You can see here's the black speaker cable, and I divert one side of that speaker cable into just a regular extension cord. Now I can plug any number of things into this, and it will act as a filter. And so recently, well, this past week, I used this to divert the signal into a light bulb. The best sounding light bulbs are the fluorescent bulbs, and you can also do drills. If you do a power drill, it will not only light up, well, it lights up the light bulb. You'll see I have a little video here. But it will start the motor of the drill, and now you've got audio going through the electronics of the drill and then the harmonics of the motor running in the drill. It's just the craziest thing you ever heard. So let me just show you a little bit of this latest session. All right. So here's the guitar. That's the sound of the light bulb. Cables going into, we've got a pedal. It's going into this mic preamp. It's going into a preamplifier. Into this Hafler amp. This is my solid state amp. Speaker out. And into the light bulb. All right, that's fun. Yeah! It's so much fun doing the filtering thing. And now I'm gonna try all kinds of things I've got a whole list of things that I wanna try as far as these filters go, but it is a little bit dangerous. So if you're gonna try these experiments, just make sure that you're very careful. Do not play with things that are plugged into the wall. These are not plugged into the wall. I leave the amplifier unplugged until everything is connected, and then I plug it into the wall. So, all right. So let's talk a little bit about mixing and some things that you can do in the mix. Again, I suggest that you not be too lazy and go ahead and create your own reverbs. Stairwell reverbs are great. You just send your signal into a speaker at the top of the staircase and record the reverb and then put it into your session. You can make snare drums sound so much better if you have a recording that the person has, the snare just sounds like crap. You can easily improve that sound by running that snare track into a speaker and lay a snare on top of it, and then mic that snare, and then record the sound of the snare going into the speaker and triggering that snare, the new snare, and you can really improve the sound of a bad snare in a recording that way. I like this plugin. I use this quite a bit. It's a Cooper Time Cube plugin by UA. But in fact, that is an emulation of this device, which is the original Urey Cooper Time Cube. Does anyone know about this? Of course, right? Some people know about this. I have one at my studio, and I was really curious what's in the box, right? Garden hose. You can make your own. I was like, why can't I make my own? It's just a speaker on one end of a garden hose and a mic on the other end. And by the time the sound gets down to the end of the hose, there's a delay. But it's such a popular sound. You can hear the sound and the vocals of some really famous albums by Queen, ELO, John Lennon. In the 70s, this was a very, very popular effect. And it has a very distinctive sound. So I did make my own Cooper Time Cube, and you can do it too. It's very simple. In fact, every session I go to, I carry around this bag with some things. I got a hose, and I put usually longer than this. And you just take a funnel, put it on your hose, put a speaker over the, you know, play through the speaker, put a mic in this end, and you've got yourself a Cooper Time Cube. I usually use a really long hose, and then at the then I'll start an album project by starting to mix the slowest song first, and then cutting the hose to adjust it for the next song. Oh, all right. Anyway, what else do I have in my bag? Other things that I bring into sessions. Walkie-talkies are always very handy. Recording drums on one side and put this, just to have it taped open and use mic up this side. Very handy. Also, I always bring some Magnum condoms to my sessions because I like to wrap microphones in condoms and put them in water and then record through the water. Very handy. Yeah. Anyway, it's my toy box. I'd say, you know, you want to make every session memorable, and that's kind of the that's what it's all about. First of all, when someone says, you can't do that, well, you can, and you should try everything if you can. Try to develop a way to budget time into your project so that you have time to have fun and experiment. Life is an adventure. You got one chance to do this, so, you know, make it an adventure. Just make each session memorable any way that you can. There's always something. Yeah, sorry about this. Yeah. Yeah, all right. In fact, that was a great sound. All right. Anyway, thank you so much for letting me entertain you tonight, and I hope you got something out of it, some ideas for your next session. And this is our book. All right. All right. Great. So we'll do some giveaway, and then
should we do what would you like
we'll
to do?
We'll do some
we
giveaway
first, and then come back and do giveaway.
Okay.